Welcome back to The Activation Face. This is Tim, and I'm here with JP as always. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. All right, so we are doing the second faction today. It's not the second one in the book, because we felt like Welsh are probably, they have an ability that doesn't work right now, so they'll get an FAQ soon anyway. And so we thought we're doing the Pagan Rus today. All right, Pagan Rus. JP, I think they're infamous for their playstyle, so... Let's talk about them today and see what we think of them. Do you want to start us off with equipment options or history, whatever, man?
Let's start off with the fluff.
Yeah,
let's do the fluff. All right, so cool, these are basically the Vikings that instead of going into Western Europe went into Central and Eastern Europe and kind of established their own little kingdoms in the end. So they are heavily influenced by Viking stuff. So basically what we see a lot of people do is start off with Vikings in Age of Vikings and then realize that it's not quite what they're expecting, and then slowly transition into either Pagan Rus or one of the other Viking factions. So it's a pretty versatile faction. The models from Gripping Beast and Foot, or I guess Gripping Beast, are actually pretty decent and very characterful. So I have a warband of them, so they're, I don't know, I can definitely recommend. Also, the Victrix Vikings are also perfectly acceptable for making these. So pretty easy to get into and then versatile. In terms of equipment options, it's also really nice because they are basically the same as the Vikings. So that helps a lot. So the Warlord is just on foot with no special equipment. Your Hearth Guards are also just on foot, no special equipment. Warriors, same thing. And then finally, your levies have javelins. So there's a slight difference there. They can't have bows.
Yeah,
but that's not a big deal anyway. I'm not sure why you would want to have bows. We'll get into that later. They also have some other equipment options, but that's down to choosing a legendary warlord, and we don't believe in legendary warlords.
We don't do that stuff, man. No, we don't do that stuff.
Get out with your legendary warlords.
Yeah,
no, seriously, they're fine, but we're just not going to cover them right there.
Yes,
they're just a little bit wacky.
Yeah, they see play in every 100th game, so it's not super popular. So I guess that's equipment options done, that's history done. Do you want to go straight into the battle board?
Sure, yeah. We can also just say that they use the Viking dice, so
yes,
in terms of just porting over a warband super easily, this is definitely high up on the list. So just Viking dice. Anyway, should I hit the old... basic abilities?
Yes, please.
They have absolutely nothing special. Basic abilities.
Right, then we're going to the first advanced ability. It's called Kagan. It takes any die facing. It's a melee ability for Hearth Guards and Warriors only. If a unit is within short of your Warlord, gain 3 attack dice, defense dice, or a mix of both, and it's 5 if you use the rare. So it's just... I've seen this played a lot. I think it's just good value getting 3 attack dice, 3 defense dice, or even a mix. It's just good value. As long as you're near your warlord, this is just, yeah, it works. It works on the guys that want to be near the warlord anyway, Hearthguard Warriors. So I think this is average, probably good, very good. Yeah, somewhere around that area.
Yeah, definitely. I think the defense dice, especially with the rest of this board, just makes them very difficult to kill.
Yeah.
This next ability is called the Long Winter, using an uncommon die. This is an orders, so until the start of your next turn, no unit may charge or shoot at a unit more than M away at the start of the charge or shooting attack. So this is probably one of the more infamous abilities on the board. I guess the fluff background here is there's blizzards out. Nobody can see anything. Bows are useless. You can't see anything anyway, so you're not going to be charging a very long distance. This is amazing against cavalry armies. It makes them so incredibly frustrating to play against, but it really, really helps you because essentially, unless they somehow start with an M, they arrive with a fatigue, unless they have some special ability for a fatigue-free charge or something. But it's really amazing. It makes your warriors also very survivable because nobody's going to bother shooting. I guess one thing that the javelins got better in this FAQ. So now they're even better if you're facing the long winter. But that's about it. I mean, you normally kind of control whether or not somebody is within M of your unit. But it really shuts down the entire, for example, the Normans. This is like a really bad time for them.
I was just going to say, the space ability basically says, fuck you, Normans.
This is the hard counter for Normans, yeah, it basically.
It is. Yeah, right. Talking about blizzards, let's go into the next ability. It's called Blizzard. It takes an uncommon, and it's an orders reaction. Designate one of your units. All open terrain within very short of a figure in that unit counts as uneven terrain until the end of the turn. So going with the theme, your opponent cannot charge you like a long or even a medium here. So very, very annoying for cavalry armies, even annoying for like armies that just, I don't know, want to throw javelins, be on the edge of the like 6-inch bubble, and then they can't charge if you have Blizzard up. So, and this is just also an annoying ability to keep to put on your board, right? So you keep it, you put it on, and then you don't even have to play it. You don't even have to play it because your opponent will have to kind of put more activations in if they want to do stuff. And then you decide if it's too many activations, then you just don't play it because it won't make a difference. And if they just put like a few activations in, and you know you can cancel a bunch of stuff with this, then just play it. It's super annoying to keep on. So yeah, I hate that one. It's good.
This one also links really nicely with one of the mercenaries, so the scouts. So it makes them almost uncatchable. And also, since you're in uneven terrain, it means that your cavalry, if they do decide to charge for some reason, they'll just arrive, especially if you have it combined with a long winter. Basically they arrive with two fatigues.
Super fun.
Yep, super fun time. So cavalry armies are going to have an exceptionally bad time in this particular matchup.
Kind of the theme here, yeah.
Indeed. All right, so the next one is Black Bears. This is using an uncommon or a common. So this is a melee ability. So discard attack and or defense dice equal to your current armor to increase your armor by one. So this is the Pagan Rust board is really defined by two things. One, shutting down activations and making movement much more difficult for your enemy. And the two, messing around with armor.
Yes.
So this is the first, we've kind of seen the first ones where you're messing around with your opponent's activations. And now we're going to talk about the messing around with the armor game. Black Bears. So this is a melee ability using a common or an uncommon dice. So discard attack and or defense dice equal to your current armor to increase your armor by one. So first, this seems like a little bit of an overkill ability, but I promise this will all make sense once we start talking about some of the other abilities. And this board is also, I guess, infamous for a number of chained abilities that you want to do in the correct order actually get a benefit out of it. So I think we should probably just say this exists, and then we'll talk about the combo maybe once we've had we've covered all the board.
Sounds perfect. Yeah. All right. So next up is Frozen Wind. It's an orders reaction that takes two commons. Place in a long measuring stick on the table so that at least one end is within medium of a table edge. Every unit with at least one model touched by the measuring stick takes a fatigue. So, talking about infamous abilities, this is probably the one that's, I don't know, played the most with Biting Cold coming up. But yeah, this one, it's two commons, and if you, especially in the beginning, you can slow your opponent down so much, especially in scenarios where your opponent has to deploy within short or medium of their table edge for whatever reason. This first two turns are so annoying. If you gain like four fatigues through this, and in some scenarios, it just makes sense to put your army down together, and then this really punishes that. So to counter this, the only option is to not put your army down as a big group. And yeah, in some scenarios, that's just not viable. And so yeah, this one can be very, very good. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's also orders reaction, so you've You can do it at the end after your opponent has placed their dice, so you can kind of figure out what they're going to do with their unit.
Yes.
And then you're like, mm-hmm. oh, I see you only have one Hearthguard activation. Yep. Let me hit that Hearthguard unit, so you either have to rest or come at me with a fatigue. So that kind of mind game like really messes with your opponent. And if they haven't played the Pagan Rust before and like you slap this down on them and like turn one or two, then it really messes with their mind for the rest of the game. Like normally you'll get two units easily with like a little bit of luck. If people haven't spread their units, you'll get three. Sometimes if you get really lucky, you'll get more than that. But I think generally two or three is going to be your...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Also, they do have some clarifying text. The measuring stick, if you don't, it's kind of like the standard one. So that counts as like a 1-inch wide stick. So you actually have quite a nice little template to put down on the table.
Yeah. One thing I feel like I need to say for me, or maybe for us, probably only for me, I'm a little bit disgruntled with the Pagan Rust, because their playstyle just doesn't sit right with me at all, because I always feel like they what they do is kind of slow the game down, and that's not how I play. So when I say this is good or bad, I try to be like, I try to evaluate the ability, but obviously this kind of goes kind against what I like in like playing, and I mean I can't keep that out. Like, there's no objective. I definitely, no one can be objective. I don't think I can be objective. So just throwing this in here so that it's clear. I have a little bit of a grudge with these guys for sure.
Sure. Yeah. One thing is this board is very dice hungry. So you're always messing around with, do I want to put down Frozen Wind, or do I want to do one of like the sweet melee combos, or do I actually want to move my units around a little bit? So this one, when I play Pagan Rust, sometimes, especially later in the game, when you do need the melee combos, gets dropped.
I would agree.
So it's definitely something like turn 1 to 3 when you're sort of maneuvering and trying to get some advantage before you actually hit combat. But it just wastes your opponent's dice as well, because basically for two dice they have to either do like a bunch of they have to rest a bunch, or they have to use their determination or whatever. So it really messes with their game style.
You basically pay dice to make them pay dice, right? So, yeah.
And it's normally quite an efficient trade. So, all right. So the next one, one of my favorite ones, is White Wolves. This is using a uncommon and a rare. So reduce your armor by 1 and gain both attack and defense dice equal to your new armor value. If you use a rare, remove a fatigue from your unit. So this is pretty damn amazing to begin with. The reduction in armor seems a little bit strange, but there are ways around it. For example, we've just covered black bears. And you'll notice in the wording, this one says you gain both attack and defense dice. So
yeah,
this is kind of when your armor... starting to discard things and increase armors, lower armors, stuff like that. But you're kind of getting ahead a little bit here with in terms of gaining some extra dice, either defense or attack. And then finally, with the rare, it also means you can do like a move and a charge and then just pop off the fatigue. And then that way your opponent cannot mess with your armor even more, even though with the next ability.
Yeah, the orders here a little bit of a problem, right? Because you kind of want to play black bears first to get the max out of white wolves. And if you have the rare on here, then playing the rare, the white wolves early, kind of you drop 1 defense and 1 attack dice that you could have gotten, but you deny your opponent the possibility of taking your fatigue. So it's a trade-off as always in Saga, I think.
Yeah, especially for this board. But it's yes. I think it'll all fall into place once we start talking about the combo of death.
Yeah. All right. Let's look at the next possible part of the combo of death. It's Blood Feud. It can take any die facing, with the rare not being like any better than the other ones. But yeah, it's a melee ability that says reduce your unit's armor by 1 to reduce the opposing unit's armor by 1. Or increase the opposing unit's armor by 1 to increase your unit's armor by 1. So Yeah, these are conditionals, so you have to be able to do this to reduce or increase the armor to get the other effect. But yeah, this reducing the armor and lowering or increasing the armor is going to be super good with the combo piece. That's going to be the last ability. We're going to leave you with that information until we get there. And yeah, Blood Feud can be very good if you gain some additional like bonuses through the other ability.
Well, I also think it can be good on its own as well, right? Because if you're being charged and you want to close ranks with some Death Star, mm-hmm. like, okay, your
yeah, A warriors enough, of course, yeah.
Lose 4 attack dice, but they bump up their armor from 4s to 5s, and then you don't really care what you do. You just want to survive, so you don't really care that you're hitting back with 4 attack dice on a higher armor.
Yeah,
so stuff you're like right, that you're makes right, it like it's like yes, it's very, it's exceptionally good with the combo that we're going to talk about, but it's also just good if kind of in the non-ideal situation where you just want to maybe survive or you don't have enough dice to have everything else lined up as well. So it's pretty versatile. It seems kind of strange to begin with, but there are some definite nice use cases. And then similarly, also vice versa, if they're closing ranks. Like it doesn't matter, and they're hitting
yeah,
you back.
Yeah, the 2 attack dice they have don't really matter. Yeah,
then instead of like, you know, you can just hit them like much more easily and then with relatively low risk to yourself. So it's really, really versatile.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Okay. I like this one. The next one is called Biting Cold. So this is using a common or an uncommon. So this is activation reaction. So trigger this ability after the resolution of a unit's charge, movement, or shooting activation. That unit may not be activated again this turn. So this is particularly nice once you realize that, for example, javelins, they get a move and then the free shot. However, that's a separate activation. So basically they run in to get into range and then you're like, oh, I'm going to play Biting Cold before you shoot me. And then you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I guess you're stuck here. So
tell that to my composite warrior Huns.
Yeah, so against javelins and composite bow armed foes, like this is definitely going to make a bad time with them. So not only can you just completely shut down like long range shooting with long winter and just have a bad time with cavalry with the blizzard with that they charge in with like over uneven terrain. Also, the biting cold just really sucks for people with javelins and with composite bows. So I guess you've kind of hit like every single weapon type, basically, that you can kind of make their day go less good. And then generally just it's amazing because you can just completely shut down somebody's plan. If somebody has a Death Star, it's just game over for them, basically.
Yeah, maybe that's why I have such strong feelings for the Pagan Rust, because the when I played Huns a lot, right, these guys are just the bane of my existence, and it's always super frustrating for me. But I mean, they have cool tricks, and I can acknowledge that. And seeing this here, yeah, of course, this is really, really has a lot of potential. So that's cool.
Yeah. Also, kind of one way around it, which is not ideal, but there's a way of doing this, is essentially make sure you don't have a Death Star, first of all. And then, for example, if you have three points of Hearthguard, split them up in like 1.5 point each. And then just line up to charge like one unit. So just that way, one of the charges will get through. And also, if somebody's like lining up Biting Cold, Long Winter, Blizzard, and then that kind of stuff, it also means that, yeah, they're using 3 dice basically to that they're not putting on, you know, the White Wolves or the Blood Feud or something else.
But yes.
Like,
yes.
Just force the Pagan Rust player to make these decisions. Because, yeah, it's impossible to put down dice everywhere.
Yeah, you're right. The next one is the pack. It's an activation ability that takes a rare. Resolve a shooting attack against an enemy unit. You may roll 2 attack dice for each of your units within medium of said enemy unit and containing at least 5 models. No saga abilities can be triggered during the resolution of this shooting attack. So I think this ability, I don't think I've ever seen it played. I just think there's, because the board is so dice hungry, the activation pool is sometimes the best place for the rare. And then the White Wolves is also a good place for the rare. And Kagan to get 5 instead of 3 dice is also not terrible for a rare, but I guess less good than the others. And so, yeah, I don't think this sees play that much. Of course, it's nice to have a nice shoot, but I'm not sure the Pagan Russ are that easy to maneuver because there's no multi-activation to kind of prepare this easily. You will have to spend a lot of dice to get units into range to actually make this work the way you want it to. And of course, if your opponent's just offering a unit in front of your whole army, then sure, this can be really good. But I think the White Wolves White Wolves is just super good for a rare or the activation pool.
Yeah, so realistically, you might get a max of 2 units within range of M of an enemy unit, generally. So, like a rare for 4 shooting dice, yeah.
And your warlord doesn't count, so yeah. That's just
so annoying. It makes it like it just yeah like it's fine, but in reality, the 1 or 2 times I've ever used this has been incredibly disappointing. So you could just put it to use somewhere better on the board most of the time.
At least it does generate fatigue, right? It's not one of the units activating; it's just a shot.
Yeah, sure, but probably you can just put like a post-it note over it and.
Most of the time.
you won't even notice. I think we're coming to the pièce de résistance of the board, the ability that ties everything together. Well, I guess it's the second 2 dice ability. So this is using an uncommon plus a common. This is Wrath of the East. This is an orders ability. So until the end of the turn, each time one of your unit's armor increases or decreases during a melee, it gains 2 attack dice and 2 defense dice. So this includes all abilities, all messing around with fatigue, all of your opponent's abilities as well. However, it does just happen in your turn. So just make the most of it while you can. Unfortunately, it doesn't kind of move run over into your opponent's turn. So having said that, Tim, I give you the honor of talking about the combo of Doom.
Yeah, sure. So, best, I think, in my limited experience of going against the Pagan Russ, I think the combo of Doom is usually to play Wrath of the East and just have it on. And then you probably play Black Bears first to go up on armor, so you lose 4 attack dice. So let's take a 8 stack of warriors. In the beginning, they have 8 attack, 0 defense, and 4 armor. And then you use Black Bears. They have 4 attack and 5 armor, and no defense dice. But they gain through Wrath of the East. They gain 2 attack and 2 defense dice. So we're at 6 attack, 2 defense, and 5 armor. And then we do White Wolves to reduce our armor again and gain attack and defense dice. And so we will be at armor 4 and at 12 attack dice and at 8 defense dice. That's just basically with 2 abilities. And for all the other units, this will also work. The fatigue the opponent has accumulated or you have accumulated, whatever, it's all going to trigger this. And so Blood Feud as well, of course, reducing your unit's armor because you're going to get defense dice anyway. At least that would be my take on it. And so there's just this just makes all the things that looked like they were just small little improvements, they make them really good. So many defense and attack dice. If you play this right, you can easily stack up a unit to insane heights. So yeah, this is the combo piece, and it's a 2 die ability, so that explains why we said the board is super dice hungry. The one combo, if you want to play it, basically takes 5 dice. And it will be an attack of doom, but you always have to kind of see if you have the activations, the dice for it, if you want to do any of the other stuff that kind of denies your opponent. So Biting Cold, Long Winter, Blizzard, that stuff. Frozen Wind, of course. I think, yeah, it's just you have to be kind of experienced to know when to do the... like denying stuff and when to do the crazy combo.
Yeah, also And on top of that, you actually have to move your warband normally. So, that like not a insignificant little part of the game. So it sounds really nice, but you might just get it off like once a game, and then you completely obliterate someone. So that is fun. Other times, Wrath of the East.
That is fun.
Other times, Wrath of the East is just really good if you're going to charge multiple units, especially with Frozen Wind. You can bump up your armor, plus get all the extra attack and defense dice. So it's a nice time. It's good.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So,
and also, if like your opponent's taking any of your fatigue to lower your armor, so that they can hit you back, that will not, like, on your turn only, of course, but that matters a lot less because you're gaining defense dice. So, yeah.
Yep, definitely. All right, so that brings us to the end of the board. However, we haven't talked about how to build your Pagan Rust Warband. So right now you're probably thinking, oh man, these guys look really nasty. How do I get in on the action? So Tim, how would you build your warband?
Right. I'm not sure I'm super qualified to be the one saying this, but yeah, our local German Pagan Rust, there's a few guys that are very good at this warband. And one of them is David Levy, and he's always thinking about bringing the scouts because of the combo you talked about earlier, and he has a nice mix of like 2 points of Hearthguard and 3 points of Warriors or something like that, just so that he can decide whether whether he wants to play the White Wolves, Black Bears on the Warriors or on the Warlord, and his Warlord is basically invincible with that many Hearthguard nearby and that many abilities to help him. So yeah, it's a really nasty warband, really nasty.
Yeah, so I think that's normally a pretty good setup. Like, you can't really go wrong with the Pagan Rus. Hearthguard are very survivable. You can completely shut down like long range plinking. So they're pretty survivable. You can just shut it down with Long Winter, and you don't have to worry about your like one or two Hearthguard being shot off the board by stupid Levy.
Yes, every turn. Yeah.
So I'm not against taking Levy. I'm not against taking Hearthguard for this one. So what I usually play was 2 points of Hearthguard just in one kind of Death Star unit of Doom, especially because it makes it very nice once you do the little combo. And then you can take, I think, 3 points of Warriors. You can kind of group them into like a point, like 12 Warriors as well, for like a little bit of extra punch, and then maybe some minimum size Warrior units to generate some dice. And then finally, the Mercenary Scouts, because they're just, there's absolutely no reason to take the Levy. Like, these guys, they generate dice, they have determination, and they also get a free activation the first time every turn. And if a unit, if an enemy unit stops within M of them, they can run away, which makes them very, very difficult to catch with the Long Winter. With the Blizzard.
They don't have actual like true determination, right? They only have that ability where the first move of the turn is free.
Yeah,
but
yeah. So they're
Yeah, they can't rest, but it's a good free activation because they have javelins usually anyway, so that's good.
Yeah, there's no point taking the bow option for the scouts because you're just going to block yourself with the Long Winter. And since there's only 8 of them, even though they're Levy, the shooting powers, they're not there for shooting anything. They're basically just there because they get a free move. They can run up, grab an objective. You can move them away every single time. And then also they don't take up dice when they move.
Yeah, and Javelin Levy are like the most annoying thing in the whole game to shoot at. Like value wise, it's just not worth to shoot at them. And then giving them, as you said before, giving them like Blizzard or something to basically make the area around them count as being uneven is just
half the time they're also just in terrain because they don't have the they don't suffer the effects, so it doesn't even matter if you give them Blizzard or not. And then the trick with Blizzard is that, or being in uneven terrain, if someone tries to charge them, they'll need to move up close, within shorts and then charge them, in which case you can just hit them with the old biting cold trick. And then they're stuck. So it's good.
Enjoy.
And then that's, so yeah, right now we're just talking about how awesome it is with the mercenaries, but yeah, the rest of the warband also massively,
of course,
can enjoy the advanced abilities. So they're pretty solid overall. I think one thing, like, it's nice that we're talking about, oh yeah, you trigger this combo, that combo, do everything else. But in reality, you need to be able to roll the dice. Luckily, most of these abilities take two or three dice facing. So you're not, you know, yes, you don't have to have an uncommon or you don't have to have a rare. But sometimes, like, these things don't quite work out.
A biting cold being able to take, like, both dice facings is so good because it's such a key ability. And then also, like, black bears having two options and white wolves having two options, it's just, yeah, that works really well to kind of get the combo going even without Wrath of the East.
Yeah, definitely. So I think we've talked about our feelings about Pagan Russ. I made a Pagan Russ warband version 1. End of version 1, started playing them in version 2. But doing a lot of demo games, you don't want to take them because it's a very negative playstyle, because you're essentially saying, oh, like, yeah, you can't shoot me. Yeah, you can't move. Yeah, your unit's not going to move the rest of the turn. Thanks for coming. Stuff like that. So not ideal for demoing, but very, very useful for taking to a tournament because you're never out of the game with them. You can always have some kind of trick up your sleeve, no matter what.
Yeah, and one thing. Yes, sorry, I just wanted to agree with you. One thing I think they don't usually score like super high because they just can't catch, like, they just can't get all the objectives like all the time. But they don't lose very high either.
No, it's unfortunately sometimes when you're playing against the Pagan Russ, sometimes it's just better not to play. Like, it's a strange thing to say, but you just kind of grab one objective and then go for the tie, or go for the, you know, if you're up like the 3 points, 3 master points, you just run away, stuff like that, which makes it a little bit like very cagey and yeah, difficult and maybe less satisfying than playing against some other boards.
I would agree. So I think you talked about the options, the metal options that you actually have and stuff, but I think it's perfectly fine to build these out of Gripping Beast Dark Age Warriors.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. And then you can use them for every other Viking themed warband.
Yeah. And also of course, I'm the plastic guy. You kind of transitioned yourself, but I'll just pretend that you're still the metal-only guy. I think the Victrix Vikings also work super nice, too. And also the back actually works super nice to build, like, 3 points of Hearthguard or 2 points of Hearthguard and some Warriors. Because with the Vikings back, there's a good mix of armored and unarmored bodies. Unlike with the Norman's kit, for example, that kind of usually ends up being a problem. But yeah, this the Vikings back, if you can even put some more fur on them if you want to make them look more unique, more like Pagan Rust.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so I think we've covered them now. Like, we have a like we have like a love-hate relationship with them. Like, they're really good, but yeah, they're also really annoying.
Yes,
I really like the look of the warband, but sometimes I was just like, oh yeah, I'm playing Pagan Rust, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. And it was really awkward. And I just decided, okay, they're going to stay in the foam case for a little bit. So they haven't been taken out for about 3 years, but no big deal.
I mean, I think we can summarize it following way. Like, they have a play style and they do the play style very well, but I just hate the play style. So yeah, that's the love hate relationship for me. I think they do their stuff really well, and if you know how to handle them, then they can do, like, they can definitely fry your opponent's mind. But yeah, they just have a playstyle that is difficult for me to handle personally.
All right, so it's essentially it's complicated.
Yeah, do you, it is. It is. Do you want to give them a rating out of 5?
I would give them 2.5. Baggy trousers out of 5.
Fair enough. Yeah.
This is, like, I will explain myself. I think the power itself and the versatility is a 4. However, just the negative playstyle brings them down to kind of the middle.
Yeah, maybe it's just our European bubble, right? Maybe other people in different parts of the world play these guys like super aggressively and have some super cool tricks up their sleeves that do stuff that we have never seen before, of course. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think their ability to play is probably like a 3.5 for me, because as soon as there's multiple objectives, these guys can struggle, or if they have to cross the table. And yeah, going into them or seeing your opponent like be super sad that they have to go into Pagan Russ, I would not be able to handle that. So yeah, I'll give them a 2.5 as well.
Okay. All right, so that was it for this week. We have no idea what we're going to do next.
We'll do something.
Actually, I feel like we have a super special guest coming up.
Oh yeah, we do. Yeah. You'll see who that is next time, I think. Yeah.
Very special.
Yes.
All right. All right. Thank you for listening to The Activation Phase.
Thank you.
Take care and speak to you soon.